Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after. Thanks very much for joining me. Thanks for being part of my day. It's my pleasure, as always. You're going to be glad you hung out with us a little longer because we got the resident banker of the Small Business Advocate Show with us right now, Michael Menzies. Mike Menzies is the president of Easton Bank and Trust, Easton, Maryland, over the Eastern Shore, where the Canada geese are thick as flies, and the soft shell crabs are wonderful in the spring and the summer, and independent community banking doesn't get any better. Mike Menzies, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, James. It's always great to be with you. Don't forget the rockfish. You know, we've got the rockfish too.
Yeah, I forgot about the rockfish. When are we going to go? When are we going to go rock fishing?
Well, you know, right now we've got some big rockfish in the Chesapeake Bay. Good time to go get.
Now, what is a rockfish? What is it compared to? Is that like a salt stripe or something like that?
No, a rockfish is a striped bass, and the Chesapeake Bay is a primary estuary for the breeding of the striped bass that resides throughout the Atlantic coast, and they migrate down every spring down the Atlantic coast, come under the Chesapeake Bay Bridge tunnel, and up into the Chesapeake Bay.
They get big too, don't they?
They get gigantic.
Yeah,
50, 60 pound rockfish.
Wow!
Right
there. You know, in Flyover America, I think we call those saltwater stripes.
I think that's what they call them.
It's a big white fish, isn't it?
It's a striped bass. Yeah.
It looks kind of white, doesn't it?
Yes, it's a white fish that looks like it has a prison uniform on.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's interesting. I keep thinking you're going to invite me to come over and do a little rock fishing, but so far nothing's happened.
Go buy a fishing rod.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Mike. By the way, my audience has heard me for 11 years. I've been telling my audience, if you don't have at least one of your banking relationships with an independent community bank, you're messing up. I have actually said, I don't care how many bank relationships you have, you must have one relationship, and one well-developed relationship with an independent community bank. Mike, all the years when that was just a good thing to do, 2008, and in 2009, it's going to wind up being an essential thing, and I have to say, Mike, the best advice I've ever given small business owners.
Well, it proved to be sage advice, for sure.
Because the big banks aren't lending money right now. Not like I know they would like to, because they don't need any more liabilities on their books, do they?
Well, we're going through. Actually, they need to deleverage, and deleveraging means that they need to reduce the assets that are on their books, and that's what lending is about. They're rushing to capture liabilities so they can deal with the process of deleveraging falling values in assets and getting rid of assets. And
for a bank, a liability is a deposit.
A deposit, exactly.
And an asset is leverage. And
right.
So it's kind of backwards for a bank, isn't it?
The accounting is reversed between a bank and a customer.
Yeah. So and of course that's what I meant. I know a story about a guy that was a rock solid gold, had done business with this bank for years and years. I mean, this guy's a multimillionaire, and he needed $100,000 loan, and he went to one of the big banks, and they said, you know what, we're not making any loans the rest of the year.
And he moved
his deposits to us.
Yeah, well, we are enjoying a rush of business in many respects because of what you're talking about, because the industry, in fact, is going through the process of deleveraging, and that means getting rid of assets and reducing the balance sheets of the industry. Going on throughout corporate America. This morning I heard that we've gone from 17 million cars to 11 million cars.
Yeah, that's right.
In sales. So that's an example of deleveraging. Less volume, less need for assets, less need for people. Basically pulling in the horns, and that's micro.
Are you making car loans in your bank?
Absolutely. The challenge with car loans is not making the loans. It's finding consumers who are willing to pay a market rate, 5 or 6%, to borrow money to buy a car, when for the past 10 years the culture of the nation has been that the zero interest rate loan.
Right.
And you know, so that's the way the car industry's gone.
Get over it, folks.
Financing.
If you want a new car, get over it. when we come back, we're gonna get Mike to talk to us about the fable, to tell us again the fable of the barbell.
There
Mike told us about the barbell years ago, and we're going to get him to revisit that fable. You're like this story, folks. It's 20 Tales. Stay with us.
Happy anniversary, baby. Got you on my mind. Happy anniversary, baby. Got you on my mind.
We're back. It's 17 Till, celebrating our 11th anniversary, wrapping it up today. We're gonna cut out the obnoxiousness after today, I promise. At least until next year, then we'll have our 12th anniversary. And you can handle that, can't you, folks? One week of obnoxiousness a year, that's not too bad, is it? Welcome back. It's 17 Till. Mike Menzies is our guest. I'm Jim Blassingame, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.com. That using to your advantage. Mike is the president of Eastern Bank and Trust out of Eastern Maryland, and the resident banker and the small business advocate Brain Trust. And Mike, thank you for all that you've done for us over the years.
Well, it's been my pleasure, Jim. It's been fun working with you.
Yeah. Hey, Mike. Oh, by the way, folks, Mike is also incoming chairman of the Independent Community Bankers of America. Coming up, at what I saw you what in March? Mike.
That's exactly right. The largest trade association in the world and the only voice dedicated exclusively to community banks.
Absolutely. And what is the, where's that event going to happen?
It happens third week of March in Phoenix.
Phoenix. And I'm still waiting on my invitation, Mike. I'm sure it's on the way. So I'll check on that later.
Yeah, I'm waiting on mine.
I think you've got one already. Hey, Mike, years ago, and I mean maybe 9 years ago, maybe 10, you explained to us the banking barbell effect. Explain to the audience, because see, folks, back in those days when Mike first explained this to us, we could imagine it, but we couldn't actually kind of actually see it happening in front of our eyes. I believe, Mike, that barbell story that you told us before, I think we're watching it happen in front of our very eyes right now. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much happened, Jim, and the barbell effect is that 10, 15 years ago, we had maybe 12,000 banks in this nation, and they looked like a pyramid. And you had the biggest banks on the top of the pyramid, and they would roll down to the regional banks and the money center type banks, and they'd roll down to the state dominant banks, and they'd roll down to the community banks, and you had a normal pyramid, and that would profile the industry. And frankly, that pyramid profile was consistent with most of American industry. And over time, the large began to swallow the middle, and they consumed the middle for the most part and left very, very few in the middle of the pyramid and created a an industry that looks like a barbell, where on the right-hand side of the bell you have a huge quantity of assets, gigantic quantity of assets, with very few banks. And on the left-hand side of the bell...
Like Bank of America.
Like the nine largest banks, Bank of America, Citibank, J.P. Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley now, Solomon, the largest financial houses now banks. Remember, we don't have...
Hundreds of billions of dollars in assets.
Yes. So today we have a barbell, and the top five banks today, for example, have over 50%. I'll say this again. The top five banks have over 50% of the $13.5 trillion of assets in this industry. The top 150 banks of this nation have almost 80% of... in this industry. The remaining 8,200 banks, have about 20% of the assets.
And they're on the The bell on the left side.
Right. So you have a huge concentration, an unbelievable concentration of assets and deposits. Very, very few banks. And then you have lots and lots of really quite healthy community banks scattered throughout the nation, some 8,000 community banks that keep on keeping on, just keep doing the things that they've been doing of intermediating within their community and doing relationships, not transactions. So we're learning that what's happened when an economy recedes and you have extreme leverage and extreme size. And we're trying to figure out, as an economy, how to deal with these behemoths. They're gigantic.
But now, Mike, at one point in time, though, the handle of this, the bar of this barbell, actually represented the intermediate banks, the middle-sized banks. But that barbell is getting thinner and thinner these days, isn't it? I mean, the bar part of the bell.
Yes, there are very few banks in between. And what we'll attempt to understand over the coming years is whether the large banks break up and create more medium-sized banks. Whether the small banks have to aggregate and come together and become medium-sized banks,
some of them will.
Pardon?
Some of them will.
Some will. No question about it. There will be certainly there'll be some mergers that were driven by economies of scale,
by opportunity. I mean, it's going to be some opportunity for them to do that.
Right. And as you know, the TARP, the asset relief program, asset relief program, has spent $350 billion, but a large share of that $350 billion, and that money has gone into the largest banks of the land. Some of that money has gone into helping them acquire other banks, the way PNC acquired National.
Do you think that's the right thing to do with that money, Mike? Do you think that they should have used that money for acquisitions? Or do you think they should have put that money back into the marketplace?
I think the money was used appropriately for acquisitions when the acquisitions. Like PNC buying National City, because there you had a healthy bank buying a troubled bank instead of the troubled bank going into the FDIC.
Right.
So, if you had the choice of having the troubled bank fail and go into the FDIC or be acquired by another bank, then you'd rather have it acquired by another bank. And that makes sense. But I do believe that there will be much political stress over what happens to this money in terms of banks borrowing the money, leveraging it, and lending it to get the economy going again.
Right.
And that stress will be because it's a tough time to make loans.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, folks, the reason the barbell story is important for you is to help you understand where you should be looking for your credit lines and for your banking relationships in the future. You're going to be doing more business with little independent community banks and or larger banks, huge banks, not so much in the middle. Tintel, stay with us. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. This is our guest. He's president of Eastern Bank and Trust in Eastern Maryland. That's an independent community bank, and they're one of the little guys. But I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, I've said this 100 times before, maybe 1,000 times, but I'm going to keep saying it because I believe this with all my heart, because I'm living this, ladies and gentlemen. If it weren't for an independent community bank that I've been doing business with for almost 20 years. If it weren't for that bank, I would not be standing here today. A big bank would not have had the kind of relationship with me that I needed over the last years, over the ups and downs of being a small business owner. Mike Menzies, on behalf of so many small business owners out there who have this story to tell, the same story I'm telling, because of independent community banks, we thank you for you guys doing what you do.
Well, that's generous, James. It really is. And we are singing out of the same hymn, and we believe that small is good and big can be too big at times. And that's what we're experiencing as this economy corrects.
If you've never had a relationship, a really, really sincere relationship with a banker, find an independent community bank today and go talk to somebody. I think you'll get excited about what you find there. Mike, talk to us about your thoughts on the economy. Government's trying to do, and I mean, I think people are just kind of frustrated, and you know, I don't know what the mood is. is, but it's not happy about how what the government is doing. Are they making progress? Are they? It sounds like they don't know whether they're washing or hanging out sometimes, Mike.
Well, you know, James, we're all victims of our own experience and the environment within which we reside. So mine is a banking experience, and that's the basis of my perspectives. But clearly what's going down to me right now is that we're going through an economic correction that was a product of excess. And the excess was too many mortgage loans and too many houses and too many cars and a little bit too much of everything. So as we scrub out excesses, we see the natural reaction of decline in asset values. The problem that we have is that these asset corrections are concentrated mostly in not just financial assets like stocks and bonds that normally go up and down. Houses don't go up and down as much as they have in this cycle. And there's an extreme inventory in houses, and that needs to be scrubbed through the economy.
You're in Florida today, and I've been told Florida has 10 years of inventory, housing inventory.
Yeah, and I think when people are looking at these stats, you remember that it's tough to generalize by state. You really need to look at by community, because there are communities in Florida that are remarkably healthy, and there are communities in Florida that are really stressed. Same with California, Nevada, Ohio, Michigan. There are communities that are very healthy and some that are really, really stressed. But as we go through this correction, we will see a decline in housing values. We'll see an overall residential correction, and that will ripple through state economies and state budgets and that sort of thing. So what I see happening is the deleveraging of America, and that will occur for probably a couple of years. And there'll be more assets than there are dollars to consume those assets, so those prices will fall. And we'll reach equilibrium at some point in time, and then the great economy and the great philosophy of this nation will reemerge.
Mike, the thing that's different about this downturn than all the other ones that I've been involved in, all the way back to '69, I mean, this is a perfect storm, like I've never seen before. But the big difference is, and the thing that's going to make coming out of this thing tougher, has been the lack of credit availability. That's in past recessions we've always had the credit markets pretty healthy and ready to go when people were ready to borrow. It's different now, isn't it?
Yes, but you know the lack of credit availability has to do with a lack of confidence of the value of assets. That's why credit is not available.
Yep.
And when you lose confidence in the value of assets, you need to live through the correction. And there's the great challenge, because the federal government has decided to allow some companies to survive and not allow other companies to survive. The government is selectively determined.
And they're not that smart, are they?
Doesn't. Well, you know, I don't know. I sure wouldn't want to be making those decisions.
Yeah,
I think they're tough. But they have the difficult challenge of figuring out who should make it. And that slows down the normal correction of asset values. We've been unwilling to let people take the losses that have occurred because we're afraid of the consequence of those.
It's
losses.
Another example of what the head fake that the market gets when the government is involved, and that's one of the problems we've got. Mike, thanks for being here. Good job today. EastonBankandTrust.com, right?
Yes, sir.
And it's not your grandfather's independent community. Hey, thanks, Michael.
Hi,
appreciate
James.
You. Have a good
Take
holiday.
Uh-huh,
Mike Menzies, ladies and gentlemen, Eastern Bank and Trust. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. And this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.